Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
This plan is for the middle class families in this country who deserve a break. It is for the families who are out there living paycheck to paycheck who just keep getting squeezed. You know, about half the country today is living paycheck to paycheck, and a lot more people are about a paycheck away from living paycheck to paycheck in this country. And this is going to help give people relief. The Tax Cut and Jobs Act will deliver real relief for people in the middle, people who are also striving to get there. With this plan, the typical family of four will save $1,182 a year on their taxes. For many families, having an additional $1,182 more will make a real difference. That $1,182 more covers about a year's worth of gas for your car. It covers your family's phone bill for the year, depending on how much data, of course, your kids use. That $1,182 more, it can help you pay down your debt faster. It can help you start and renovate your home faster. That $1,182 more for the average family, that will help you put more money away for college. It will help you save for retirement. It will help you save for a rainy day. With this plan, we are getting rid of loopholes for special interests, and we are leveling the playing field. We're making things so simple, that you can do your taxes on a form the size of a postcard. With this plan, we are making pro-growth reforms so that, yes, America can compete with the rest of the world, but we're also making it so that families like these that are here can have more take-home pay.
There's three major points I want to make. When I was 20 years old, I started my first small business. Small business creates more jobs than any other thing in America. In this bill, they'll get lower taxes, go to 25%, the lowest it's been in 40 years. More small businesses, more jobs. Second, every single American is going to keep more of what they earn. The single American, when you talk about a standard deduction, instead of the first $6,000 you earn tax-free, it's $12,000. For these families and couples, the first $24,000 you earn, tax-free. You get to keep it. You get to determine what's best to invest. We're going to bring the money that's sitting overseas back to invest in American businesses. Even before this bill goes into effect, I believe you're going to hear from businesses saying they want to come back to America. And the cornerstone of what Ways and Means, of what President Trump has worked so hard about, at the end of the day, is that middle-class family able to get more. As you heard from every other speaker up here, almost $1,200 in your pocket. That's the difference. This is about tax cuts. This is about America first. And this is about the future. Not only will America grow, we'll show the rest of the world how to lead.
And you're going to see Democrats who have been chomping at the bit to play the economic warfare, and they say, well, the rich should pay more. Well, guess what? The rich live in, you know, Boston, New York, and San Francisco, as Doug just said. They argue for higher taxes until higher taxes are on the horizon, and wait and see what Democrats do when we deliver what they've asked for, which they can pay a little bit more. They're going to hate it. So it's a talking point. But on the policy side, they're going to freak out.
All right, 24 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, Kevin McCarthy, Paul Ryan, and the tax plan that came out today. We were great anticipation, but when you look at the tax plan, it's not exactly what I would consider the most Reagan-esque, as the plan, you know, maintains the top bracket at 39.6% for households. It does do good things. It gets the corporate tax rate down to 20%. That's a big improvement. The repatriation, it certainly is helping the middle class in most ways, although if you're in a state with high local taxes, deductions, and so on and so forth. But anyway, there is a deduction for property taxes at 10%. It preserves the mortgage interest deduction only for existing mortgages and new purchases with loans are of $500,000 or less. And Kevin Brady said the change was made due to the drive tax relief of middle class families. But Reagan dropped the top marginal rates. Remember, 50% of income earners in this country pay no federal income tax. Anyway, the top rate exists for those that earn more than $1 million, Brady said. No change, and there would be no tax charged on household incomes less than $24,000. A 12% rate would be charged on income from $24,000 to $90,000, 25% $90,000 to $260,000, 35% on $260,000 to $1 million, and the rates would be different for single and single head of households, and the plan would nearly double the standard deduction from $12,700 to $24,000 for married couples filing jointly, and the personal exemptions in the code would now be worth $4,100 a year for each taxpayer, spouse, dependent. That would be eliminated in this. Estate income tax would no longer be deductible in this. That means if you live in New York like me, we're paying a lot more. Anyway, here to weigh in on all of this, it's not about me. I'm just telling you what the facts are. Larry Kudlow is with us, Freedom Caucus member Dave Brat. Larry, let's start with you. I think we missed the premise of your book, which was the Kennedy tax cuts, the Reagan tax cuts. Reagan went from 70 to 28% top marginal rate. That's not happening here.
No, you're right. I mean, in a nutshell, Sean, the business side of this is really good, very good. Pro-growth. In fact, I don't know why Ryan didn't use this number, but average wage earners, you know, people are in $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year, probably get about $4,000 more in after-tax income just from the business side alone. And that's very pro-growth. That will drive the growth rate by itself through 3% so they can pay for all this. The individual side, though, is not nearly as much pro-growth, as you pointed out. And I will say this. The one good thing they did was they really expanded the brackets. So that's good. That means, you know, down around the 12% bracket to 25% bracket, they're getting a nice break on raising the income thresholds. Nice break. Top rate, no, they didn't bring it down. They should have. I happen to like rich people, and the trick is to make more and make the non-rich rich. So all the Democrats are going class warfare. It's odd because the top end doesn't really get much here. But on the whole, the business thing, lower the corporate rate to 20%, full expensing for new investment, repatriate the overseas earnings. That stuff is just what we wrote, Steve Moore and I and others, Mnuchin in the campaign. And that is powerful pro-growth stuff. And I think that alone is definitely worth supporting this bill.
David Brat, what do you think? What is the Freedom Caucus thoughts on this?
Yeah, well, I agree with everything Larry just said. I think he had it just right. The corporate, the S-Corp. The S-Corp, we're going to see there's going to be a few hiccups hidden in there as well. I think we may have to do a little bit more technical fine-tuning to get the S-Corps where they need to be a little bit better. But overall, that's what Larry was saying. We're going to get 3% plus growth. Today, the Atlanta Fed, based on current projections, has us growing at 4.5%. And so that's just based on expectations right now. And then you always got to compare this to the alternative product. The Democrats, 2 weeks ago, had a progressive budget they put in. It raises taxes $10 trillion. It raises spending $11 trillion and has more debt and deficit than we do. And you won't hear a word of that from the mainstream press. They're already haranguing us, and the mainstream media is concerned about deficits for the first time in decades. And so the good news for me in Virginia, which is very different than New York, and there are some concerns at the higher income levels, but in Virginia, the average family income is $60,000 for a family of four, and they're going to see about $1,200, and that's a huge chunk back in the pocket. That pays a lot of bills, and so that's a winner. And basically, the leadership did a good job. I'll credit them. When they get it right, they got this right. They stuck to their promises. They promised us kind of fourfold, four pillars. The international tax system, we're going to be competitive again. The S-Corp, the C-Corp, and middle-class tax cut. And we were bound by the Senate rules a little bit, right? $1.5 trillion deficit limits because they wouldn't let us dynamic score. And so we had to, you know, do the best work we can, be pro-growth with that $1.5 trillion limit on us. And so, you know, maybe next time we can keep improving. Like you said, it's not fully Reagan-esque, but it's a pretty good move. I'm pretty happy with it.
You know, Sean, one point here on the scoring is really, really important. The Senate has got to put in a 3% economic growth rate for the next 10 years. They have got to disregard the low-ball non-dynamic scoring that's going to come from the Joint Tax Committee and the Congressional Budget Office, and they've got to work through the parliamentarian in the Senate and perhaps overrule her. But if they don't get the 3% score on growth, you know, that's worth a lot of money. It's about $2.5, maybe $3 trillion of money over 10 years. If they don't get that, this thing's not going to work. It's just not going to work. And then they're going to have to go back and start, you know, raising the corporate rate and all kinds of things that we don't want them to do. So the scoring, and I want a political will by Mitch McConnell and company, is going to be crucial.
I have no faith in Mitch McConnell. Look, the only thing that's missing, I agree with your analysis about the corporate side of this. It's actually everything that we'd ever want, and yet it's extraordinarily pro-growth. Here's where I run into a sort of mental block on this, is it seems on a psychological level that the Republican Party doesn't have the stomach to fight the battle that, well, the top 10% pay 75% of the taxes already. And that when you look at 20%, they pay 99% of the taxes. Let's be honest here. And you got 50% of Americans paying nothing. And so the rates for the bigger taxpayers in this country, you know, Reagan believed in cutting taxes for everybody. And that would stimulate the economy. And it worked. There are two sides. I'm not disagreeing that there's a lot of corporate rate. I mean, look at the rate and growth we've had and the good news that we've had. You got the National Association of Realtors reporting houses are now selling at the best pace in 30 years. You've got literally a 7-year low in food stamp participation. That's all great. You've got in terms of the job market, we have more people working than ever before. The Conference Board reported consumer confidence 17-year high. The Atlanta Fed, I think it was Dave Brat that said it. One of you guys said it. They're projecting GDP growth for the fourth quarter at 4.5%. That would be stunning. And we have news today that jobs cuts have now hit their lowest level in two decades. So for the forgotten men and women in this country, this is a net gain, but it would be a bigger gain if we followed the full Reagan model. That's just a fact. And I don't think the Republicans have the stomach to say or explain that tax cuts for the people that pay taxes is good for everybody.
Yeah, you know,
Larry, you know I'm right.
Of course you're right. I mean, look, already, the GOP is allowing itself to be mau-mau'd by the class warriors in the Democratic Party. I mean, it's really bizarre. I was on the air this morning, and the head of the DNC, this Tom Perez, all he could do was talk about how rich people win, that we can't let that happen, the estate tax is bad, blah, 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 blah. That stuff, you know, the growth message always wins. Reagan proved that. By the way, John F. Kennedy did too. But the growth message wins. Lower marginal tax rates create incentives to work, save, invest, and take risks. We should reward success, not punish it, and we should end the war on business. Now, that's what Donald Trump's trying to do. And the GOP, as you say, has got to gear itself. It's got to have the internal fortitude to fight back on this silly class warfare stuff. And unfortunately, they caved in, as you can see, what they did with the top rate and some of the deductions. Having said that, Sean, I'll take it, all right? I'll take it for now, because the business side is so darn good. And the biggest benefits from those business tax cuts, I don't know why they didn't press this, it comes to the wage earners. Kevin Brady said this, and he's right. The wage earners are the big winners here, not the rich people.
Every night we're going to hit the big issues of the day and some surprising notes from all angles. That means Heartland America, you have a champion. Working class Americans, I came from you. And whether you're Republican or Democrat, your voice will be heard. Your values, your patriotism, your straightforward approach to issues, your demand for the truth, we'll have a hearing here on the show. Don't miss The Ingram Angle, premiering October 30th on the Fox News Channel.
25 now till the top of the hour. That was the promo. Apparently, there's rumors that it actually may happen tonight. The Ingram Angle will be following Hannity on the Fox News Channel. Laura Ingram making her debut tonight. We don't want to miss this program. And with a lot of news out there, she has a best-selling book across the country she just released a week or so ago, Billionaire at the Barricades, The Populist Revolution from Reagan to Trump. And are you really coming to work tonight? Because you signed this deal like 2 months ago. What's going on? What's the real truth? Is this just a game that Fox is playing with everybody? You're actually going to show up.
I have a question, Sean. Once you finish your show and before you get ready for your next show, could you help me write my monologue? I'm working on, I have some hand puppets, and one is the establishment. One puppet represents you, and the other is the populace.
You are not doing that.
We'll just have it for a couple of segments, you know, and then.
You're going to use puppets on the show. There's a formula for success that's never been tried before.
And then somewhere along the line, we'll fit in General Kelly, who we're also talking to.
So I'm listening to you in your I'm listening to you in your promo. Is General Kelly on tonight?
That's good. He's our exclusive guest tonight.
Awesome. Well, you talk about the heartland and the working class, and I'm like, what am I? Chopped liver? I mean, that's me. I mean, in that sense, you and I have a lot in common.
Yeah, we come from humble beginnings, which made us hungry, frankly, and made us appreciate what we've earned. And I never left that behind. I mean, I carry my mother with me and her hard work ethic and her love of country. I think about her all the time. She died many years ago, back in 1999. But she was just one of those scrappers. She was like a working class waitress. You know, didn't put up with a lot of guff, a straight talker, very street smart, even though she didn't get to go to college or anything. And she didn't like phonies. She didn't like politicians who were phony. She was obviously a big fan of Reagan. She was a volunteer in the Goldwater campaign all those years ago, Sean. And so she really kind of gave me my sense of who I am. And I think I owe it really to my mother, just like what, again, all this, just this ethic I developed and, you know, made a lot of mistakes along the way and will make a lot more, but I'm really blessed. And I feel really grateful to be following you on Fox. And it's been a long time coming. And I think it came just at the right time.
Everybody has their own thing, their own identity. I mean, I know they like to say, well, they bunch all of us in radio into one group, but they're not listening and they don't really care to listen or actually learn on their own. But, you know, Rush has his own separate identity and does his show his way, and Mark does it his way, and you do it your way, and I do it my way, and the same on TV with Tucker, et cetera, my show. How do you differentiate yourself, even though we may have you and I in particular, I think, have a lot of agreement on issues?
Yeah, I think that for me, especially kind of at the end of the night, we're going to do politics in the rest of life. So how politics affects family, parenting, education, how we deal with the screen-obsessed society, and what's government's role in all this, if there's a role at all. I'm going to talk about what the meaning of America is tonight on the show. You know, General Kelly talked a lot about sacrifice and how there's just a very thin layer of Americans who sacrifice as the military sacrifices. And how do we really appreciate what service is if we ourselves don't know anyone in the service? And those ideas, those kind of big ideas, we're gonna, you know, really explore in depth. And also, we have to remember that it's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Like, things get fixed, and, you know, we should all be a lot happier with the way government goes. But we have a lot of work to do before we get there. So it's kind of politics and everything else. It's a big bouillabaisse. It's a big mix of issues and perspectives. And every now and then, just like you and I do, and we're on the show together, every now and then you just need a belly laugh, let's face it.
I think the belly laugh is going to be me handing off to you and you actually showing up. I think people will be shocked.
Are you? Wait a second, Sean. Are you going to hand me a margarita tonight through
the
double boxes? Salt rocks.
Salt rocks margarita. That's for 11 o'clock at night when you get off work. Also, Shannon Bream is starting her new show tonight, I guess. I think I'm like the only person besides Martha that's left in New York now. This is Fox is now a D.C.-based, you know, network at this point.
I'm coming up there. Don't worry about it. I'm gonna do the show from up there. They claim that the graphics actually move from studio to studio. Isn't that amazing with technology today?
No, listen, I use different studios all the time, and nobody would know the difference. But I mostly am locked into my one studio in New York. What do you make of the Manafort indictment today? I mean, I'm reading 31 pages, and I'm like, okay, tell me where's the Russia stuff. I'm looking at financial information from 2006. And transfers that ended in 2014, and I'm looking at one guy that wanted desperately to get somebody's attention in the campaign, this guy George Papadopoulos, and he got nobody's attention, and he only got, you know, this plea deal on the FBI lying, and I'm thinking, okay, where's Uranium One? Where is Fusion GPS, the real collusion that we have been reporting?
Oh, I'm sure they're getting to that. Don't worry. Oh, look, the 31 pages is, you know, this is classic white-collar indictment. I used to practice white-collar criminal defense law, and so whether it's false statements, 1001 statute, or conspiracy, or money laundering, tax fraud, mail fraud, wire fraud, this is all the classic throw all the charges into one big pot and stir it up. I mean, that's what they're doing with Manafort and his associate, Mr. Gates. Now, I don't know what Manafort did all those years ago. I don't know about these clients he represents. But the idea that this somehow redounds to the conclusion of Russia manipulating the election to help Donald Trump is just ludicrous on its face. And Papadopoulos is a minor figure who made the mistake of apparently, allegedly lying to the FBI. Well, I mean, I guess he pled to that. I mean, that's just really stupid for him. Like, I don't know why he did that. I don't know why he quote, forgot to mention his meeting with that that Russian person. But, I mean, again, there's no there. This is just millions and millions of dollars of taxpayer money, dozens of attorneys, some of them connected to the Clinton campaign, loyal to Hillary Clinton, and Bob Mueller, who, of course, presided as FBI director during one of these other scandals that you just mentioned. So, again, I think this whole special prosecutor statute is probably unconstitutional. It's just this roving band of unaccountable lawyers who, you know, if they want to indict somebody, they can probably indict somebody in a group of people. They can find one person they can indict on something. I mean, that's
well, I mean, and a lot of people don't. I think that's such a good point. I mean, you can indict a ham sandwich. I mean, this is, as I understand it, this was put in a grand jury that where Donald Trump got 4% of the vote. And, you know, on top of that, I mean, the defense never gets an opportunity to present a thing to the grand jury. The standard is probable cause, which is way, way below the legal standard to get a guilty verdict. So all of that is going to come into play. Paul Manafort saying, absolutely, hell no, I didn't do it. And he deserves the presumption of innocent like everybody else. But I think the thing that stands out the most to me is it's not the president. It's not the campaign. It has nothing to do with campaign activity. And we have evidence of real crimes as it relates to real Russian collusion with Fusion GPS, funded by Hillary, by the DNC, and now maybe by Obama. And they use false misinformation and propaganda to alter a presidential election. And that was all information that came from Russia. And I haven't even mentioned Uranium One.
All right. Well, I'd like to see a real honest investigation into potential false statements by Clinton campaign officials about the origin of this dossier, about who paid for the dossier. I mean, we need the bank records. Okay. You find that the reason they were able to charge Manafort is that they got his bank records. They subpoenaed the bank records and they showed probable cause. They got the bank records and they got the wire transfer records. And so they were able to indict him. Now, where are the bank records for Fusion GPS? Who paid for what one? Exactly who knew? Who authorized? Those are all really apt questions. And I would assume that we get answers to those. But I don't think Bob Mueller is the person to be doing any of this investigation. I think we need a separate special counsel to investigate the special counsel, perhaps.
What do you make of Tony Podesta, founder of the Podesta Group, stepping down from the firm that bears him and John Podesta's name after coming under investigation by Mueller and to fight Mueller's investigation? I mean, obviously, this has now taken on a whole different turn than its original purpose, which was Trump-Russia collusion.
Yeah, well, I think you're going to have a hard time getting hired by people as a political consultant if it turns out that you end up being at the center of a firestorm involving your previous client. And I'm sure he has investors in his group, and they probably didn't like the fact that he was at the center of this either. I mean, people do want to make money at some point, so I don't think any of this helps. It reminds me of Weinstein stepping down from his group. You know, it's just, there's a cloud of suspicion. Whether or not he did anything, I don't know, but there's a cloud of suspicion, and people want him to move on, and, you know, he should move on.
What do you make of this battle between the GOP establishment and, say, those of us that support the president, believe that his agenda represents very similar to Reagan? This is a predicate in your book and a point that you make in your book, because I agree with you. I can't think of any one single program or policy or idea that Trump is espousing that doesn't in some way reflect the values of Reagan, with maybe the exception of trade.
Well, even on trade, Reagan slapped those tariffs on Japanese motorcycle imports and saved Harley Davidson. And he was derided by the Cato Institute back in 1988 in a long article trashing Reagan as the great protectionist. So Reagan understood that trade had to be, you know, done smartly and for the benefit of the American people, American worker. But on the larger issue, Sean, here what's happening, and I'm going to talk about this tonight in the open of the show. The reason there's all this gnashing of teeth and wailing by the left and by the never Trumpers, both, you know, the neoconservative globalist Republicans, is they're losing power. They're losing ground. And it's not fun to lose power. I remember what it felt like in 1992 when Bill Clinton won. And I remember what it felt like in 2008 when Barack Obama won. And then in 2012, I mean, when you lose power, it doesn't feel good. But this is a natural interplay that happens in a representative democracy. They went way too far. They pushed policies that the people didn't want for far too long, and people are sick of it. They want real change, and they want the government to work for them. And that's why Trump was elected. They want someone who's going to shake it up, dust it off, and put in a new set of policies to advance our interests and our liberty, our life, our pursuit of happiness.
Well, Laura Ingraham is with us. She starts a new program tonight at 10 following mine on the Fox News Channel.
Sure. Are you going to, like, put on makeup for television and everything like I have to do?
No, I'm doing the open in a Nancy Pelosi costume, actually, for Halloween. So
that's right. Halloween is coming.
And I'm going to be clutching a gavel. Because.
By the way, Halloween is one of the worst. You know what we're teaching our kids with Halloween? To bang on people's.
It's Christmas.
Well, no, you're teaching children to bang on people's door and beg for free stuff.
Right. Well,
it's a liberal holiday. By the way, I say this stuff, and you know what happened? I said this like years ago, and liberals write, yeah. Hannity says Halloween's liberal because we're teaching kids to beg for free stuff. He's so sick. I'm like, they're so humorless.
They have no sense of humor. Hey, Sean, do you remember when we were kids? Like, you just went as a bum or whatever. Well, I was always a bum. I just rubbed my.
I was a bum every year. That's all I did.
Yeah,
I used to take cork and I'd put it on fire and then put the chalk on my face. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just you look like kind of like you rolled out of the construction site you used to work on. That's a good thing.
Pretty much, yeah. Now it's you got to get a mask of Hillary or Donald Trump.
Oh no! Now it's cost $100 to outfit a kid in a stupid Halloween costume.
Yeah, I know. The Ingraham angle tonight at 10, right after Hannity on the Fox News Channel. Are you really showing up, or is this a total lie?
I'm waiting to see what I'm going to get, like free stuff from you through the double boxes. If it's good, I'm going to show up. Lame, like fizzy water, I'm not going to show up. Don't give me some like healthy juice or something to keep me going at 10 o'clock.
Oh, now she's whining about her hour. So first night on the job, she's complaining about being on late. I can't believe it. I've been there 23 years, and I'm not complaining. All right.
Hey, Sean, what did you? I need to go take a nap, so I got to go.
Oh, my God. God help us. All right, Ingraham Angle tonight at 10 after Hannity on Fox News. So joining us is Ed Klein, number one New York Times bestselling author. His brand new book out, The Plot to Destroy Trump. And we were talking about the deep state and how they're working against Trump. Now, we know that this deep state exists, and what we're really talking about is weaponizing the powerful tools of intelligence gathering, where they could listen into any conversation of any American anytime.
That's right.
You know, Bill Binney, who's been on this program, says every call, every email, every text message is all metadata gathered and secured in some of these data centers that the government has.
And we know that the intelligence community set out from the very beginning with John Brennan, who was then the head of the CIA, to undermine Donald Trump. And Brennan was a terrible, terrible opponent of Trump. He hated the idea that Donald Trump was trying to make a deal with the Russians on certain areas where they could cooperate, such as, for instance, Syria. He did, and this went against Brennan's religion, if you want to call it that, and the religion of the intelligence community. And this intelligence community has been rogue ever since Trump won the election.
Well, to me, that is key, because if the weaponry of intelligence is turned against the American people, and it has been, if you're unmasking Americans for no good reason at all, just for political purposes, for example, was the FISA warrant based on the phony, salacious Hillary Clinton bought and paid for dossier?
We don't know, but we assume that probably was.
Oh, I think it was.
Yeah, I do too.
Now, that would mean any evidence that they gotten out of that would be inadmissible in court, wouldn't it?
Right. Why otherwise would James Comey have briefed Trump and Obama on this dossier if he didn't think it was valuable and usable for intelligence purposes?
It wouldn't make sense.
No, of course
not. Yeah, in a lot of different ways. All right. What about the FBI reports warning that ISIS ties to the anti-Trump resistance and highlighting the danger of domestic terrorism from anti-Trump radicals? You're saying basically this is a propaganda campaign that was hatched.
You're talking about the ISIS connection,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the FBI, what they say. Quote, there is clearly overwhelming evidence that there are growing ties between U.S. radicals and the Islamic State, as well as several ISIS offshoots and splinter groups. This is the greatest challenge to law enforcement, and this is still a quote, since the Weather Underground and the Black Panther Party.
And who's connected to this?
So here's what happened. The FBI, in the summer of 2016, sent a group of agents to Germany for the G20
summit
of chief, what do you call it, industrialized countries.
Right.
And there were a lot of protests on the street, and they discovered that Antifa, these American violent groups, were taking part in these protests. So they followed them. And what they discovered is that they had contacts with Al-Qaeda operatives and ISIS operatives. And when they went deeper into it with Interpol and others, they discovered that our locally grown left-wing anarchists who are smashing everybody, you know, property and beating up people.
Occupy Wall Street,
yeah,
Antifa.
Those whole groups were getting instructions on how to make bombs and how to use...
How do I know?
The from
FBI?
The FBI report, yeah.
And you're printing the report inside the book?
The entire report is printed.
We continue with Ed Klein. He's the former foreign editor for Newsweek, former editor of the New York Times Magazine, and contributing editor to Vanity Fair, apparently, though, is hated now by the left, and his new book is The Plot to Destroy Trump. You know, if you look at all of the intelligence leaks, which is unprecedented, even Jimmy Carter recently revealed there's never been a president that has come under fire like Donald Trump has come under fire.
Yep.
It's almost been a leak a day, especially in the beginning of his presidency. And then you look at the varying groups that are against him. The Democrats are against him, except for, with the exception of me and a few others giving him a fair shot. Everybody else is against him in the media. They're like salivating at the thought of taking this president down. Democrats don't want him to succeed. Never Trumpers don't want him to succeed. And then you got people like, you know, Ben Sasse the ass and you know, people like, you know, Snowflake out in Arizona who's threatening to run independent, and John McCain and a bunch of others. They don't want him to succeed. So where does that leave us as a country if everybody's lined up because they don't like the choice of the American people? Are you saying that you believe the evidence is they want to overturn a duly elected president, the results?
That's exactly what I'm saying. And one of the groups that you left out were the colleges and universities. And there's an FBI report on that, too, by the way. And the report says, and I'm going to quote from the report, we have information, this is the FBI report, that there are numerous caches of weaponized tools and the ingredients to manufacture improvised explosive devices on college campuses across the country. This is the greatest challenge to law enforcement since the Weather Underground and the Black Panther.
Pretty frightening and chilling scenario.
Absolutely.
And we see tensions rising all over on college campuses. I mean, you can't be a conservative and speak at the original home of the free speech movement out in Berkeley. I want to ask you about Hillary because I've been spending an awful lot of time because I think what she did was sell out America's national security. And I've been very blunt. And I think the idea on the surface that anybody would give the bad actor, Vladimir Putin, and a hostile regime such as Russia, 20% of our uranium, the foundational materials for nuclear weapons, and that the FBI knew, and that means Mueller knew because he was the FBI director at the time, and Eric Holder had to know because he's the AG and he's the head of the Department of Justice, which oversees the FBI. And Rod Rosenstein, you know, was a local guy that was overseeing the case. He knew about it. Why would anybody ever, for any reason, ever think it's a good idea, putting all the money issues aside, to sign off on saying, here, Vladimir, here's 20% of our uranium. What did we get for that?
The only possible answer to that question is you have to understand the mentality of the Clintons. And the Clintons have, for the last 40 years, been doing nothing but trying to enrich themselves and empower themselves.
How much money do you need?
Well, they've got now, $200 million or more dollars, I'm told.
Right.
The foundation got, $135 million in donations from Russian-connected donors while she was approving this uranium sale. Bill Clinton got, as you know, $500,000 for a single speech from a bank connected to the Russians. All this stuff.
It's not only just connected to the Russians. Yeah, you're right. Renaissance had a financial interest in the whole Uranium
That's
One
right.
deal. And Bill Clinton was seeking permission from his own wife's State Department to speak with nuclear officials. He was pushing the Uranium One deal.
And where was the FBI during all this, I'd like to know?
Well, this is the
Under
thing.
Under Mueller, where were they?
Well, this is what we know because, you know, this is why the push that we had so hard last week that did pay off, which was lifting the non-disclosure agreement, basically a gag order, on the one person that had actually infiltrated on behalf of the FBI informant. But he's got tapes and he's got emails. He's got firsthand accounts. He's got documents. and they had pretty much muzzled him up until now. But thankfully, because of Sarah Carter and John Solomon, and I would argue myself a little bit, that NDA was lifted. So the veil is going to come off all of this. But Mueller knew. And that means that Holder knew. Holder personally signed off. He was one of the nine along with Hillary.
Well, Mueller worked for Holder.
But they knew bribery, extortion,
right,
money laundering, kickbacks, and all sorts of racketeering crimes were happening as a result of Putin using spies in this country.
No question about what you're saying. And even, you know, the Wall Street Journal has come to this own conclusion, too. This is the establishment Republican newspaper saying Mueller should go.
Should go.
Right.
Well, so then the question is, you know, finally we've got congressional investigations. But I think unless we get a separate special prosecutor, why would Mueller ever do anything that's going to expose himself?
Here's what
or McCabe or Rosenstein or, right, or Holder.
Here's what I've been told by my sources at the Justice Department. There are a group of prosecutors newly appointed during the Trump administration who have been lobbying Jeff Sessions for a number of weeks now to appoint just exactly what you said, a special prosecutor for Hillary Clinton. He has refused to do it.
Why? What is he doing?
He has refused, adamantly refused to do it. He says, this is what he says. I'm not agreeing with him. I don't want to politicize the Justice Department by going after an opponent of the president. But the fact of the matter is, the evidence is so
overwhelming and incontrovertible.
Right. So I'm sure the president knows about this. I don't know for a fact, but I assume he must know about it. And because it's not as if it's I know about it, certainly the people in the White House know about it. And I don't know, you know, maybe eventually he'll shift Sessions to another cabinet and get an attorney general who should do his job.
Well, Rosenstein's number two, and he has a conflict, obviously, in this case, because he knew on a local level when he was a local whatever DA or, you know, I guess one of the districts in Maryland, I guess he was running at the mm-hmm. time. To me, they sold out. But there's no rational, logical, commonsensical reason that anybody can give me that we would give a bad actor and a hostile regime 20% of our uranium. Now, I know the Clintons benefited financially, Bill in his speech, and he advocated for it. And we know that, you know, that the foundation benefited to the tune, according to Clinton Cash, Peter Schweitzer, $145 million, but there's no rational reason for it. Why would Obama sign off on it? What did America get from him? Why would everyone else sign off on this?
There's no good reason. There's no answer to your question because it's so obvious that they shouldn't have done it. It's against national security. It's against anything
he
that
sold it out.
That's
compared, I would say the worst deal is the Iranian deal, you know, giving $150 billion to the mullahs of Iran, thinking that they're going to be cooperative. That's the same mistake Bill Clinton made with North Korea, trying to bribe Kim Jong-il, mm-hmm. Kim Jong-un's father. And I'm looking at the same. This has got to be the second biggest strategical foreign policy disaster decision that we've ever had.
And have you seen any mainstream newspaper say this?
Yeah, listen, I think the reason I'm number one in cable and our show's exploding is because we're telling the truth.
That's right.
That the American people need to hear.
And the mainstream media is ignoring it. Because this is a scandal of enormous proportions.
See, this is the point. They don't care about Russian. They don't care about Russian interference in our election,
right.
Do they?
No, obviously they don't. Otherwise, they'd be doing something about it.
So let's go back one more time to the whole issue of the decision to fund the dossier by Clinton and her campaign and John Podesta funneling it through a law firm. It turns out the DNC funneled money through the same law firm.
Yes.
And we learned this weekend that Obama funded money through the law firm to give to Fusion GPS.
Right.
Okay. So then the dossier is delivered to Hillary Clinton. Do you know somebody in the room when she got handed this document?
I do not.
How do you heard about the reaction, though?
Yes. From this senior guy who was a strategist for the campaign and heard her boasting and bragging about it, not the day she got it, but later on when she was saying this is going to blow Trump out of the water.
She thought she had the election then.
That's right. She was absolutely confident she had the election.
I don't think anybody in the media knew, but except me, that Trump had a shot at winning.
I agree.
You know, I remember the night of the election. I don't know if you remember this, but I'm watching all the channels, and it was like a funeral. You know, once North Carolina comes in and Wisconsin came in and then Michigan and Florida, I thought they'd all lost their mother, father, sister, brother, aunt, uncle, and every cousin and grandparent they ever had.
And they're still acting as though they have. They're still in this state of denial. They don't want One of the reasons that Hillary Clinton is still talking about, without using the word impeachment, but certainly hinting at what she'd like to see, is because she believes this election was stolen from her. It's somebody else's fault. She didn't lose the election.
All right. Let me ask this. Moving forward, I would assume we're going to have more leaks from the deep state. Moving forward, I would assume that the real target of Mueller is Donald Trump. I think there are some naively around the president that think, oh, no, he just wants to wrap this sucker up and he's got Manafort. He'll probably get General Flynn next. And after that, we're all done. There won't be any evidence of collusion because he wants to get out of it because he doesn't want to be dragged into the whole issue of Uranium One, which he was involved in and should have acted on.
I spoke to a pollster who spoke to David Axelrod when Flynn was fired. And David Axelrod, the architect of both of Obama's election victory, said, we're not that interested in Flynn. Our ultimate goal is
Trump.
Trump.
So it would be naive to think anything else.
Absolutely. And right. Can you imagine if the Democrats take over the House of Representatives in 2020?
They'll impeach him.
They will try to impeach him. There's no question in my mind.
All right. Well, good luck with the new book. We put it up on Hannity.com. It's in bookstores everywhere. It's just out. Investigative reporter Ed Klein's new book, The Plot to Destroy Trump. And you can read it yourself, make your own decisions. And thank you, Ed.
Great to be here. Thanks so much.
All right, my friend, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number.
I want to make a feature film, which is why we need the budget that we need. There's actors, there's scripts, there's special effects.
Is it going to involve real people, real names of people active in Hollywood right now?
It will be a very true story. We will have every name that everybody that affected my life, I'm going to give the perspective that I can give what I viewed, what I experienced from a firsthand account.
And why do you need $10 million? Film students make movies for fractions.
Well, that's a film student. We're talking about a theatrical release. We're talking about I'm going to four-wall the theaters, I'm going to self-distribute, self-market, make the film, and hire a team of attorneys who are going to protect me and the film when everybody comes after me.
What would be wrong with going to the police now again? Didn't work out in Santa Barbara.
There's a statute of limitations, Matt, in the state of California, which protects people. It's not that way in New York. It's that way only where the movie industry is, conveniently enough, in California. That's the seriousness of this. You cannot, because if I were to go to the police, I would be the one who's getting sued. Henceforth, I need a team of lawyers, and I need a team of security to be around me at all times to keep me safe so I can get this message done.
Real quickly.
Not playing around. It's serious stuff, and I will release every single name that I have any knowledge of.
That was Corey Feldman. He was on the Today Show getting badgered by Matt Lauer. Corey has started what he is calling a truth campaign to expose what is widespread pedophilia that goes on in Hollywood. Now, we've all heard about Harvey Weinstein, and we followed that, and Kevin Spacey making an advance when he was in his late 20s towards a 14-year-old and all the other allegations. You know, I guess we can say that what adults choose to do is their business. I'm pretty libertarian on what people choose to do in their own lives. But if you're going to abuse children, this goes way beyond the casting couch that we have discussed in such detail. And what Corey has now been saying for years is that he, as a child actor, was abused. And how often have we heard about, you know, young kids, they want to get in the music business, they want to get in the modeling business, they want to get in the acting business. And sure, you do this favor, that favor, and we can help you. And it's more widespread, Corey's telling us, than we ever knew. Corey Feldman and his wife, Courtney, are with us. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Thank you. Well, a bit shook up after the week I've had, but yeah, still surviving and still fighting the good fight.
What did you think of Matt Lauer's questioning, you know, like you're supposed to, you know, automatically do what he wants you to do and name names? You're saying, beyond any doubt, you were abused as a child. How old were you when you were abused?
I was abused when I was, well, several times throughout my young teenage years. But it started, the first one was when I was, I believe, 14, and it went until I was about 16.
And that was daily, widespread abuse, and you're saying this is very common in Hollywood.
Well, so we're very clear. What happened to me was there were several people involved, and, you know, they were a group of friends, you know, and these people become your friends. So as a child, you're not looking at it as, you know, this is some big bad pervert that's coming to get me. And it's not a casting couch. It's not, hey, do this for me. It's not tit for tat. It's not like that. The way it comes to you is lower level people. You know, it's not some big executive that comes along and just does something
this is
to
different,
you. It's different than Harvey Weinstein in the sense that, you know, these are usually lower level people, publicists and managers and assistants and people like that who and photographers, you know. I mean, I know there's a lot of photographers in the teen magazine world and all of that. And that's where it all, you know, kind of subsides is in that lower level. And then it's almost, you know, like they serve a master of some sort, because then I know about, you know, the main guy, right, who I've been talking about forever, who attacked, you know, my friend. And that was a straight rape case.
And we would know the name. Everybody listening would know the name of this individual.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're going to tell, you're going to name names, and you're doing, I guess, a documentary
on it. It's not a documentary. What we want to do is an actual film. I want to make a film of my life which portrays the actual events as they happened. Because, you know, when I wrote my book, they made me edit it. They made me change it. They made me turn everything around because they weren't, you know, the lawyers, the legal people, they're always afraid of putting themselves in trouble, right? So I want to do a movie where I can use all the actual names of the actual people, and I can tell the incidents and the stories in the horrific ways that I experienced them, so people can really feel what it was like to go through these traumatic experiences as a child, so they understand how it affects the psyche and how you have to deal with that later in life.
How widespread is pedophilia in Hollywood?
I don't have that answer.
I don't have the answer.
How widespread is it across the world? We've already seen the Catholic Church.
But let me ask this question.
Seen,
I agree. It's
know,
horrible.
The sports world, right? We've seen it at Penn State. This is kind of going on all over, right? So we know it's not just Hollywood.
But you know of others. You know of many others in your industry that were victimized as children in this regard. Many.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about, now, a lot of people are questioning your motives here. You have called, you want to shine a light on what you've experienced, and you want to prevent other people from ever having to go through the trauma and abuse that you've experienced.
Absolutely.
That's your reason.
Well, there's more than that. This is about awareness. This is about awakening people all over the world to what's really going on. So it's about wanting to fight for what's right. It's about good and evil. To me, this is about good and evil. There is nothing purer than the innocence of children. Saving and preserving the innocence of children is the most important thing that we can do. If we are going to survive as a race, the time is now for us to stand up as one for what's most important. Period.
This is good and evil. I totally agree. Anyone that can abuse a child in any way, shape, manner, or form, it's horrific.
Yeah, and there's no two ways about it. People want to mince words. People want to make it a party thing. It's not a party thing.
It's not
funny. Not about that.
These are young kids' lives that are ruined. How badly has this impacted you personally in your own personal life? And I know I can ask your wife, too, and you probably see how it's impacted him in his life. I would guess.
I've been running from this my whole life. I've been trying to talk about it my whole life. I've been shunned. I've been disgraced. I've been discounted and discredited over this. But on top of it, obviously, my career was doing very well, right? I was in 18 number one movies in a row. All of a sudden, I get arrested for drugs at 17 years old, which granted, I was a drug addict. I paid my dues and I did what I had to do. I got sober 2 years later, never returned. I've never been in the news, never been arrested, never had any of those problems for the last 25 years. Okay? When was I ever given my Robert Downey Jr. second chance? When was I ever given that shot to be back on top? Never.
And you believe it's because people fear that you're telling the truth.
People knew at that time that I had a lot of information, and they knew that it was much better to sweep me under the carpet and forget about me than it was to allow me to become.
But in fairness to you, you've become very successful in your musical career.
And that's, yes, only because I did it independently. Again, no major label has ever backed me.
Yeah.
No major anything has ever backed me since all of this went down. I've been doing this on my own. I independently created a record label. I created a company. I created all of these things, both with my own finance, with independent financiers, and with even crowdsourcing, I've made these things possible.
How,
but thank God for my fans, or I wouldn't be here today. That's the bottom line.
How well known will some of the names be? You talk about low-level people that are involved in this pedophilia.
Right.
How many well-known household names?
There's only one that I know of, but that's not the person that molested me. So we have to be very clear. I cannot go on record and say he did these things because he didn't do them to me. I know the effects that it had on my best friend, and he told me
the story. I think I know the story. The best friend isn't alive now, is he?
No, he's not.
I know the story you're talking about.
I know the torment that he went through, and I saw that torment from when he was 14 years old because that's when I was introduced to him, and that's when he told me about it, the very first day that we met.
And this person, if I'm correct, was raped.
He was raped.
Courtney, I know you guys have been together 5 years. You recently got married. Congratulations. What impact do you see that all of this has had on your husband?
He carries a lot of guilt and shame over the situation, and I know that for his own healing, I think it's really important for him to do this so that he can release this burden from his shoulders and kind of cleanse himself of this. It's very important for him.
Why? I'm asking just a straight-up honest question. You're a victim, Corey. If you're 14, you're a kid.
Yeah.
You're a child.
Yeah.
These are adults we're talking about abusing you.
Right.
And look, I'm not a psychiatrist. I'm not a psychologist. But to me, I would just say as an outsider that only wants you to be successful and happy in your life. That's all I want for anybody. I would imagine you've got to get to a point where you understand you are a kid. You are a child. You were abused.
I do.
And your wife is saying you carry guilt. You're not the party that should be guilty here.
No, but you have to understand that when I go on my social media every single day, people sit there and tell me that I'm no better than the pedophiles themselves because I won't just name names, because I won't throw myself under the bus and leave myself hung out to dry. That's what they expect of me, and it's wrong. It's wrong, but I have to deal with this every day. Look, I'm not trying to hide anything. I'm the most vocal person in Hollywood. Who else? Who else is standing with me right now?
Everybody's like, it's almost like
from Hollywood has said, I stand with Corey, or yeah, I was there too. I know these stories. Those are true. Yeah, let me stand behind you and make sure that you don't get left to slaughter. Nobody has done it yet. I'm calling on you. Where are all my friends? Where are all my people in Hollywood? Where are you to stand up and say something about what I'm saying and show them that this is legitimate and true? Everybody's afraid. Everybody's afraid.
Take a quick break. A few more minutes with Courtney and Corey Feldman. All right, as we continue with Corey Feldman, his wife Courtney is with us. He's launched a truth campaign. He's trying to shine a light of pedophilia in the modeling, music, Hollywood industry, and frankly, anywhere that it's taking place. There's so many people that are victims, and it's not the easiest thing to say, oh, so-and-so did it for me, because at that, the moment you name a name, then it becomes a war.
Right.
And then they're going to have their PR people, their people. They're all going
to
surround
and if you don't have the money to fight that war, what happens?
They'll beat the crap out of you.
Okay, so this is why I'm telling people, my campaign that I have begun, Corey's Truth Campaign, it's on Indiegogo. Please go make a donation. If you want to win this war, I'm not saying that it's about money. I don't care about money. I've never been a money-driven person. A movie costs what a movie costs to make, okay? That's how I'm going to tell the story, okay? So let's say we've got a budget for the movie, we've got a budget for my protection, and we've got a budget for my legal fees. That's it. There's no extra layers here. There's nothing in my pocket. I don't care. I'm not trying to win off this. I'm trying to survive, and I'm trying to show people that this is the truth. Here it is. It's a fight between good and evil. Stand with me. Show people that you are going to take my side and you're going to fight for what's right.
But the reality is, in modeling, music, and in Hollywood, and you're right, the Catholic Church. I was raised Catholic. I was stunned, saddened, and angry when I saw not only what happened, but the cover-up surrounding it all.
Yeah.
And I can't even go to the church anymore. And that doesn't mean there aren't good priests, there aren't good people, and bishops.
Exactly. And it's the same in Hollywood.
But they covered it all
right.
up.
Right. And that's what I'm saying. It's the same in Hollywood. I know I have good friends there. I've talked to three people this week who are Hollywood child actors who've said to me, we all know the names. We all know them.
There's got to be.
But then say something.
Why is every childhood actor, for the most part, there are exceptions. Kirk Cameron, he's actually found a way to live his life,
yeah,
and he's not messed up.
He's
good
a religious man.
Nice
he's
man.
He's got his thing.
He's so nice. Yeah. But so many others, like the kids I grew up watching, and I don't know how old you are, but they all come up, they get out of the fame, and their lives are so screwed up.
Why do you think this is? Let's look at the systematic problem.
I'm beginning to listen to you. But
the systematic
drugs, alcohol, things.
Right. But why? Why do they go to drugs and alcohol? Because they're trying to cover up pain. Some great trauma has had to have happened to them to force them to all want to do drugs and alcohol.
Corey, I've never met you before you walked in the studio today. Never met you.
That's true.
You are extraordinarily convincing. I believe you. There's a sincerity to what you're saying and a passion in this. I think you're doing the right thing. And
thank
if
you.
People want to help you out, you can tell them where to go to help you.
All right. Well, basically, the bottom line is my vision is to create a film that is an actual motion picture with actors, with scripts, with music, with visual effects, the whole thing, but through a child's perspective. Showing what I lived, what I experienced, both with meeting all these amazing people and also these horrific experiences that I had to experience, both in and out of my home. You know, I also suffered immense abuse physically and emotionally from my parents. So there's all of that is going to be in the movie.
Last question. I remember your name came up with Michael Jackson, but you said
yes.
He never mistreated
and
you.
That's right. Yeah. And I think he was a pratfall. I think he was a scapegoat. For this entire thing. I think they literally pinned it on him.
Is it because he was so
knew.
Different? And
yeah,
like,
because
for example,
he liked to be with kids. I mean, come on, it's an easy target, right?
Well, and he gave that story, I tuck him in, I give him cookies, that infamous
yeah.
video.
It looks weird.
It looks weird.
But if you're the kind of person that, you know, the way I knew Michael, he just didn't think like normal people. He wasn't a guy. You didn't go like, hey, let's go shoot, you know, a
pistols.
Game. Let's go shoot a game or let's go, you know, play ball or let's go whatever. Let's go fishing. Let's go boating. He's not that guy.
But I would argue, you know, looking back at his career, that he got screwed up in the entertainment business big time.
Well, that's exactly right. They turned on him. But why?
Yeah.
See,
right.
It all comes down to the big why. Anyway, Truth Campaign, it's on Indiegogo.com. Mm-hmm. Your funds will help pay for the movie so I can expose the truth, and it will be 100% true, unedited. On top of that...
No lawyers?
No lawyers. I'm taking care of the distribution. We're four-walling the theaters. We're going to make sure it actually gets into theaters.
I had
okay?
to do that. I had a
if
movie
we get
this
the money.
Weekend. I had to do
but
that
But I
got to
get the money. That's the
Understood.
Thing. If I don't get the money, there's no way I can actually possibly pay to do that. On top of that, I'm going to need lawyers to protect me from the people who are going to come after me. They're all going to make claims, and they're all going to say it's fraudulent and blah, blah, blah. So I'm going to need to protect myself. I'm also going to need security because, as you can see, my life is probably in danger. We don't know, but I'm going to say there's a good chance.
I wish you success in exposing every one of these psychos. So thank you for
God
being with
bless
us.
Bless you, and thank
I'm
you
sorry
for
what
time.
Has happened in your life. Courtney, you married way up. You know that, right?
Thank you.
Way, like, she's
God
way out of your league.
Yes,
like,
of course
you know,
she is.
A thousand miles.
I'm very
no,
grateful.
I'm teasing. All right, guys.
Very
thank
grateful.
You. Appreciate it. Good
God
luck in this campaign.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number.